saying how much they want a strong woman. What they really want is a cheerleader.
I'd like someone who's physically very frail and won't stop talking.
I just want what everybody wants. I just seem to have a harder time getting it.
Hello, how's it going? Welcome to Maximum Film. It's episode 293. Won't you run a session with me? It's your host, Iffy Wadi Way, and in the booth with me are my friends. So let me introduce you to them. First up, we have the Christmas Zaddy himself, Iffy Jakuda, Ijeoma Wadi Way's favorite critic. Fight me if you want. Alonzo Duralde, what's good?
Oh, Iffy, welcome home. It's lovely to have you back with us. Well, you know, Easter, which is kind of the other Christmas, just happened. And I will say, as candy holidays go, it's pretty good. And so my what's good this week is Starburst jelly beans. I don't know why we aren't year-round on this yet, but it's a thing that happens at Easter. So, like, go look at your CVS or wherever and see if you can still grab them. I'm sure they're out there somewhere. Starburst jelly beans, I'm telling you, it is a better carrying device of the fake Starburst fruit flavors than actual Starbursts are.
So it's a jelly bean vehicle and a Starburst taste?
Yes. Six flavors in a bag. Maybe even some that aren't actual regular Starbursts. I haven't done the research on this, but it's like grape, apple, cherry, strawberry, lemon, and orange, I think. And yeah, it's just like that's... Once Girl Scout cookie season is over, it then becomes Starburst jelly bean season. This is how my year is divided.
I like that for you.
Yeah.
The only seasons that count.
I mean, and they're all like pre-diabetes season, apparently, but you know. Potato, potato.
Yeah. Well, you know, speaking of potatoes and potatoes, and don't you know.
I want to hear where this is going.
And don't you know, it's the queen of the Midwest, Drea Clark, Super Festival programmer and producer. What is good with you?
Girl, don't try and give me Idaho.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, I know. They're not going to be happy about it. We are a soybean and corn.
Okay.
Like
because I was thinking cheese.
Are real specific.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. No, we consume a lot of potatoes in the Midwest. Yeah, oh, yeah. For sure. You're not wrong. You're not wrong there.
And I'm going to bring it up again because I haven't got the chance to say it myself, but I need to redo it and say Super Festival Programmer, Producer, and shout out from the Daniels, Drea Clark. See, a lot of y'all has doubted me when I said the golden key to Hollywood is held by Drea Clark. And not only was I vindicated by the Daniels holding that statue, standing up there, looking at Drea Clark, and we heard her yell from the back of the banquet hall. Just listen, I'm right sometimes. Not a lot. Oh, not on our quizzes, but I'm right sometimes.
Zero power have I. But you know who does have power, and it actually is my what's good? One of my very best friends in this world, Carolina Saavedra, is the showrunner of a television program that is premiering this weekend, April 16th, on MSNBC called Leguizamo Does America. Oh. And it's hosted, obviously, by John Leguizamo, and they toured around the country. So each episode is a different city and looking at the Latin culture there and also how it sort of shaped historically the culture, the food, the music, whatever of that region. So they're starting in New York City, then Miami, and then I think DC and so on. I've seen a few of the episodes. I'm tremendously proud of her. I love her so much. It's such a good show. I hope people really enjoy it and get a lot out of it. Leguizamo, very easy to watch. I mean, you want a host? What more can you want? I mean, what are you going to do? Anyway, yay, Carolina. Yay,
yeah,
what's good?
Yeah, no, that sounds super dope. I look.
Would
I,
watch.
Yeah, I love me some John Leguizamo. Every time he pops up, when we were watching Violent Night, when he pops up and he's this like sad.
Yeah.
you know, Christmas. Like, yeah, I've been like since The Pest, since Romeo and Juliet by, you know, friend of
Boz Luhrmann. He's so good in that.
You know, so truly anytime. You know, I still regret not seeing him at the Pasadena Playhouse and hopefully waiting backstage to shake his hand. But, you know, we will. Still I rise.
To Wong Fu.
Yeah.
All of his one-man shows.
Yes, indeed. But, you know, there's other dope writers and amazing performers who happen to also be a guest on the show. It's none other than writer Max Fun, family member and co-creator of the new actual play RPG podcast Strumpets and Flagons, Riley Silverman. What's good?
Yay! Hello. Oh my gosh, I'm excited to be here. It's been a minute. I think last time I was here was Doctor Strange last year. So yeah, this is great.
Whoa.
what's good for me is that I'm, as of today, I am on 85 days of a reading streak according to my Kindle. My Kindle tracks, because I'm a Kindle reader, and it tracks how many days in a row that you read, and I am currently 85. My record of all time was 107, so I'm gunning for that record, and I'm excited about it because I had a really good reading record like 2020 into 2021, did a pretty good reading every day for obvious reasons, but now like it's harder to read regularly with life being what it is, but I'm doing it, and I'm excited because a lot of the books that I've recently stumbled across are like queer romance stories and stuff like that, and including two books that are in my current to be read pile, including the book that I'm on right now, written by friends of mine. So it makes me really happy.
Ooh,
to be
lovely. Listen, someone yeah. bragging about their reading streak is a very Max Film vibe. So well done, you. Yeah. Are you? Is
more like Max Page? Am I right?
Yeah. Do you have Cat Sebastian in the mix? I'm assuming
I have Cat Sebastian on my possible to be read pile in my queer romance novel lineup.
She was introduced to me by, I mean, not her personally, but her work was introduced to me by one of our listeners. Nice. What a thrill. And I still read everything she writes.
Yeah, right. Looking forward to giving some of her stuff a shot, because I was talking about, I read a book recently called A Lady for a Duke by Alexi Hall, and it's a like period romance, like bodice ripper type
yeah.
story, but the lead a female character is trans. She's a trans woman and nice. Romantic lead, and it was really awesome reading like a very of the genre, like not Blazing New Trail story, but with a trans lead. And then I was talking about it. Everyone gave me a deluge of other queer books to read. I'd already read a bunch of lesbian rom-coms and lesbian romance novels. There's a lesbian romance novel author that I love named Olivia Waith, who has these books called Feminine Pursuits. And there's one in particular that I think is one of the best romance novels I've ever read in my life. So...
Nice.
Yeah, The Hellion's Waltz.
I'm putting it on the list.
Yeah.
Break that record. Iffy, what's good?
Hey, well, what's good with me, as a lot of you may know, especially if you're following me on Twitter or Instagram, I've just got back from 2 weeks in Japan. And, you know, I can you know, say... you know, Japan as a whole, but we all know that. So let's get into some specifics. Let's get into some things that I discovered while over there. And the fact is that 7-Eleven in Japan is a whole different breed. And, okay, like I was talking to Alonzo and Marissa before about the self-serve iced coffee system, but that's not all. Their food selection, they make these egg sandwiches, which like you're like, yeah, you know, our 7-Eleven has those. Like no, it is a Japanese egg salad sandwich, and it is always good. They have katsu sandwiches in there. They have all the they have, I had dango steam buns on the hand. The closest we've got to this beauty was back in the like mid early aughts. They were testing
Famima?
Out for yes. Oh, thank you. No, so many.
I miss Famima. I used to love going to Famima. Yes.
The bow was so good.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, very few people remember, but that's actually Family Mart from Japan, which is like a competitor to 7-Eleven out there, and it was Famima out here, and it was so good. And they still had all the Japanese snacks, the steam buns at the ready, and then it shut down after a couple of years, and I still miss it. There was the one right there by the 7th and Metro station that I would always hit, and that's so to get that back in full
nice.
I want
to go halfway around the world.
Exactly.
There's one in the background in Inception. I notice it every time I'm watching it. I'm like, that's the Famima that I've been to. Yes. I think. I don't know. They must have filmed it downtown LA.
Oh, yeah.
There used to be one at Santa Monica at the Promenade. And when I used to do comedy shows at the, what's the comedy theater in Santa Monica? It doesn't matter. When I was doing shows there, I would go into Famima and get like a sandwich. And if those, I have not been in Japan. I have seen photos of that Japanese 7-Eleven egg salad sandwich, and it makes me want to go to Japan just for that sandwich.
Is it the square bread, that like great thick?
No, it's like
milk
there's
bread?
Like it's like regular egg, and then it's like another egg folded into it. It's like scrambled eggs and a fried egg all together in one sandwich.
Oh, yeah.
It's
ooh.
and it's top selling. Everest events.
Yeah, and I will say it would be completely worth it. And the other one I will give you is Coco's Curry, which there's one in Koreatown that's aight, but the one in Japan is next level. Plus, Japanese curry is my favorite. If I'm doing rankings, number one, Japanese, number two, Indian curry, number three, I'd go ahead and say Thai curry, but that's my curry rankings for the episode. But we
I'm
have
thrilled
to go-
that you were like, don't worry, you don't need to prompt me. I'm going to rank them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm going to let you know.
I will be working
he
that
knows
in.
What the people want.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Everyone wants to know what my favorite curries are. But-
Wonder no longer.
Yes. We're going to jump right into it because we're breaking out the big source to tell you about Dungeons & Dragons Honor Among Thieves. Then we're going to test our fantasy metal with a D&D creature quiz.
Ooh,
oh, see, this
oh no.
is this is a good quiz, Marissa. See, now we're talking about some good quizzes. But first,
I might be a ringer because I wrote an article about the month.
Okay, this is no longer
we'll
a
out.
Good quiz.
Hey, I can't wait to fail. Looking forward to coming in last.
Gray and I will sit here and blink a lot.
Oh, well, look. First, it's time for Itadick, our movie news segment, where we take a look at some of the stories from the past week and ask, is this important? Do I care? And Trey is about to kick this one off.
All right. So, the Super Mario Brothers movie took the box office by storm last weekend, which means a sequel is pretty much a foregone conclusion. But who will be the villain of Super Mario Brothers 2? In an interview with GameSpot, Jack Black said his character, Bowser, might not return for a sequel. Instead, Black speculated the next movie's villain could be the ruthless Wario. He went on to fan cast Pedro Pascal in the role. Is this important? Do you care? And did I say Wario correctly?
Yes, you did. I want to say, I always, now I'm finally at the point where I don't say mean things that much on Twitter. And I save it for the podcast, the listeners. But someone did a post that I saw on Twitter that was like, just go ahead and do it. And it was like an Illumination cinematic universe with all the Nintendo movies, games, and I was like, Marvel has rotted y'all brains. We do not need one studio to make all the different IPs.
Yeah.
We do not need a world around the IPs. Leave it alone, okay? We don't, and it, look, and I'm going to say this, we don't need sequels all the time. Sometimes you have a banger movie, especially this movie that is like a very specific hit. You know, like, it is a hit with fans, not necessarily with everyone. Hey, you know, like,
there is no world that you do the box office that that movie just
true.
Did with internationally recognizable IP and not think, oh yeah, we're gonna make a thousand, we're gonna put the dig this into the ground.
Yeah,
like,
you know, but you know, there usually when you want to extend IPs for that long, you need like family at the heart, and when you don't have family, it doesn't seem to make it to like 10 movies. But, you know, we'll, look, I'm willing to be wrong. But, yeah, I say all this to also say, and this is me back in my nerd bag, is Wario is more of an anti-hero than a villain. And so, like, him being like, that's the villain, I was like, I would hate that. And I'm the most reasonable of nerds, and I'm not that reasonable to begin with. So I think if you made the sequel Wario be the enemy, you'd get a lot of people being like, what?
It would end up like Sonic 2, where you'd have him be an enemy, and then he'd come back around some by the end. Like, Knuckles would end up being on his side. It's that same kind of thing.
Okay, you know what? Give Riley the script.
I'll support that. She should write this if anybody does. Quick query. Wario? Is Wario, like, Bizarro Mario?
Yes.
Basically,
yes.
Oh, God!
There's
Got
Wario.
Just from the name.
There's
well
Wario
well
and
done,
Waluigi.
People.
Yeah, the other ones they didn't like try to
Shut
make
up.
It there. They just put Wah in front of me.
Shut
so like
up.
Waluigi.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was like, that's something I would joke and be like, no, that's what they did.
I think it's cool. What happened. I think someone said, wouldn't it be funny if we called it this, and then they couldn't think of anything else besides that. Yeah.
Love it.
My only take on this is that Pedro Pascal has now starred in arguably the best adaptation of a video game into another medium ever made, which is HBO's The Last of Us. Mm-hmm. And so I would maybe just as soon not have him also appear in a shit boring one, which I thought the first Super Mario Brothers movie was. So maybe let somebody else take that bullet.
Well, yeah. And it was animated, right? It would just be a voice character?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's why I said let the guy have an afternoon making bank and then go back to making like whatever he wants to make again. Like,
other
let him have
a couple days to make bank. Petra is making
that's true.
He's paying his bills.
He's in the new Almodovar movie that's going to premiere at Cannes this year. I can't wait.
Okay. Get out of here. Okay.
an English language Western short with him and Ethan Hawke.
Oh, that's right. That is important and I care.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yes. And I guess it's the opposite for this actual news. So,
Dre, I do agree with you on that. I think that if you're talking about voice actors for movies, I would much better have actual voice actors doing the roles in all these movies. And I think Mario 1 drives me bonkers more because I'm like, you don't need celebrities to sell Mario. This movie would have done just as much money without having big names in it. And it's wild that you're like, why would you give big name salaries to this movie when you could just pocket that money and pay voice actors like normal voice actor rates?
Yeah,
exactly.
Speaking of things that Iffy will argue about on Twitter, and I will not, we have all so many details on all the Star Wars movies that are in the works. The Star Wars Celebration fan convention happened in London last week, and Kathleen Kennedy presented plans for 3 new Star Wars movies, not a trilogy, 3 separate movies set in different eras of Star Wars lore. James Mangold will direct an origin story of the Force, set 25,000 years before anything we've seen up to this point in the franchise. Dave Filoni will direct a movie set in the New Republic era, tying up stories from various TV shows, including The Mandalorian. And documentarian Sharmeen Obaid-Shenoy will direct a film about a new Jedi Order with Daisy Ridley returning as Rey. Is this important? Do you care?
Yes. I'm excited for it. Okay, so here's my thing about this. I am excited for... I like the idea of James Mangold's movie because I like the idea of taking this thing... When Disney first bought Star Wars and talked about making more movies, I was like, let's set something that's not in a time period we've seen anything about. This is a universe that has thousands and thousands of years of history. You can set a story anywhere else and you don't have to worry about stakes of stories we've already seen or heard before. So that's interesting. The Dave Filoni one is the one I care the least about. I'm like, it's going to be like just a tying in of TV shows. It's going to be fine. It's going to do well, whatever. But I'm so excited for the Daisy Ridley coming back as Rey one because I feel like there's been a certain vocal negative fan backlash to a lot of what the characters from the sequel trilogy, often frequently because of who was cast to play them and what voices were being raised up in those stories. And so the fact that Disney, it felt like for a while that Star Wars was kind of downplaying Rey and other characters because of the way that fans had, not fans, rude boys on the internet had reacted to them. And so the fact that they are actually now going gung-ho on a full other Rey storyline, and that for me opens the possibility they can get also possibly, you know, get Oscar or John Boyega to come back to do another movie too if this is treated better. And
or
so
Kelly
you
Marie
know,
Tran, is she still
yes,
is that
exactly.
character alive?
Okay. Yeah, it opens the door for potential other sequels that give more respect and time to characters that got a little rushed past in the sequel trilogies. But also I'm just a giant Rey fan, so like I'm excited as a stand girl to like have her come back. But for me it's more what it signals for what they want to do with the future of this franchise, because it felt like for a while they were like really starting to get caught up on let's just tell more and more stories set in the eras we already know and understand and have fans for instead of like branching out to other areas. So that's what makes me excited about it.
I'm actually interested in this one because Sharmeen Obaid-Shenoy is a fascinating selection. She directed a bunch of the Ms. Marvel episodes, but I know her, like she is a 2-time Oscar award winning documentarian for shorts and has like she's presented films at the United Nations. She has all of this work that's in this very humanitarian activism, global consciousness sphere. She's a Pakistani-Canadian, but a lot of her work has been both in terms of what women have gone through in different cultures, but a lot of in Pakistan, but also like the environment and all sorts. And the idea of that as a mindset in some kind of Jedi world, like that's interesting to me of, oh, please bring some of your perspective of both empathy, but also she's a journalist. Like she asks very sharp questions of society. And wouldn't it be fun if that arose? Like I was someone who loved even the small criticism. Oh, I'm going to get all this wrong. But from Kelly Marie Tran's character, when they're at the like fancy casino place, and she's like, these are war criminals. Like, you make money like this by doing bad things. So it's there's elements of that in Star Wars world already, so I'd love to see that explored.
Yeah, I'm hoping we're going to have more of an Andor and that kind of level of dialogue in these films. I think it'd be really fascinating and interesting.
As long as none of them are set on Tatooine, that would just be great.
Hey, now, as an author of books about Tatooine, I have to say Tatooine is delightful. I love sand.
It's don't make me say I hate sand, please. I don't want it to be that guy.
Look, I just have a book I got to sell, man. And I'm just telling you, you don't see me coming out here dumping on Christmas, man. Come on.
Look, there's plenty of ground to cover. I just would argue it has been covered. But I'm glad that your book is there to get every step of it.
Having said that, there's a good possibility that Rey has founded a Jedi temple on Tatooine, which would actually be interesting if that's what happens. But
and if she introduces herself as just Rey, I was kidding about the Skywalker part. That'd be fine.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to fight you so hard.
Yeah, this is something I've been saying, I think, so long, where it's like, it'll be more interesting if we focus on other eras and don't try and milk the Skywalker tree and move on. I would like to see some of the folks from the new trilogy get their just due. So I'd say yes. I also feel the same way.
And if Mangold's movie can be completely bereft of like little, you know, Easter eggy Muppet baby setup things, like, and just absolutely be its own thing, that would be thrilling.
Yeah,
I agree with that a lot.
I know why I was picked for this one, so let me just come out and say it. Friend of the pod, my good friend Timothy Chalamet will be doing his own singing in an upcoming Bob Dylan movie. In continuing James Mangold news, he'll be directing the upcoming film, A Complete Unknown, about a young Bob Dylan. Timothy Chalamet is set to play Dylan, and Mangold confirmed that Chalamet will definitely be singing the songs in the movie, which should start shooting in August. Is this important? Does anyone other than me care?
Now, usually the challenge in a musical biopic is like, you know, oh, can my voice match the amazing range and power of the real person I'm playing? And in this case, it's like, well, it could probably be an improvement.
It's probably harder not to.
You know, yeah. Brilliant songwriter. Let's never forget. But man, the vocal quality is not really what we're talking about here.
It is distinctive.
Yeah, I mean, it's got its own kick to it, though. Yeah. It's got its own charm. For me, it's less about the singing. That's great. I don't care about this movie at all because I'm Not There is such a fascinating, interesting movie to me. I don't know why you would want to try to make a better, like, it's just, that's the perfect Bob Dylan movie. You don't need to make another attempt at it.
I think the main reason I remain optimistic, I'm a big James Mangold fan. Like, he did Girl Interrupted, he did Copland, he did Logan. I mean, he made an X-Men movie that I willingly watched numerous times. So
relevant to this, Walk the Line.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, reinventing source material in an interesting way, pulling interesting performances. Yeah, I give him a higher bar of possibility than other people. But, you know, I'm sure we'll all be invited to the premiere through IFFY. So we'll see.
I do love Dylan's book, Chronicles. So if the movie is like kind of along the lines of what that book covered, then I might be in it. I'll definitely see it. I love Bob Dylan enough, but I just think that I'm Not There so good.
I do want to just give up a high five because it's called A Complete Unknown, and it's almost impossible to not sing that, right? Like, A Complete Unknown. Like, good on you. Don't name it anything else.
And then we'll have a sequel, Timmy Goes Electric.
All right. Well, on that note, let's keep it rickin' rollin'. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll let you know if the Dungeons & Dragons movie was a critical hit. Thanks for that, Marissa.
I don't get it.
Now, a critical, when you roll a 20 in Dungeons & Dragons, it's a critical hit.
Ah! I was like, it looks decent on, like, Metacritic. Like,
I'm Are you tired of being picked on for only wanting to talk about your cat at parties?
Do you feel as though your friends don't understand the depth of love you have for your guinea pig?
When you look around a room of people, do you wonder if they know sloths only have to eat one leaf a month?
Have you ever dumped someone for saying they're just not an animal person?
Us too.
She's Alexis B. Preston.
She's Ella McLeod.
And we host Comfort Creatures, the show where you can't talk about your pets too much, animal trivia is our love language, and dragons are just as real as dinosaurs.
Tune in to Comfort Creatures every Thursday on Maximum Fun.
Welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Ify Wadiwe. In the studio with me are...
Drea Clark.
Riley Silverman.
Alonzo Duraldi.
Today's movie reboots a flop-ridden film franchise that's based on one of the most popular pastimes in modern nerd culture. It stars Chris Pine and Michelle Rodriguez leading a ragtag gang and was directed by John Francis Daley and Jonathan Goldstein, who also co-wrote the script with Michael Giglio. Alonzo, would you do us the pleasure of giving us a brief synopsis of Dungeons & Dragons Honor Among Thieves?
I'm getting sad with this because I'm only slightly more capable than Drea maybe on this one, but I'm not even going to try and get into specific adjectives because I know that you and Riley are going to school me, so I'll just bring it out of this. Chris Pine is a guy who sings and is a spy and is a single dad, and he and Michelle Rodriguez, who fights people a lot, hook up with Justice Smith as a so-so spellcaster, and then also Sophia Lillis as a shape-shifting wood nymph, and they band together to bring down Hugh Grant before he can do something really terrible to benefit a bunch of terrible red wizards and the hot guy from Bridgerton Helps. Dungeons and Dragons.
Okay. So for clarification, Chris Pine is a bard. Michelle Rodriguez is a fighter.
She's a barbarian. She's a barbarian.
She didn't. Okay. I wasn't seeing enough rage, but I was. But honestly, now based on her backstory, it does make sense that she's a barbarian. But I as a constant barbarian player, I wanted to see some rage bits. But also, you know, that's
she murders a man with a potato. How is that not a rage bit?
Because you have to
Tuesday.
Cast. You have to cast rage, and so I want to see some.
Well, they did a lot of like blending the like moves into character. Like they're not doing like I'm doing an action now.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Oh yeah.
But yeah, she's from the Elk tribe. She's supposed to be a barbarian.
Yeah. Okay. And then Druid was the one that you were like shape-shifting thing. Mm. That's Druid.
Yeah.
And the guy who has no business being as hot as he is from Bridgerton was a paladin. And they did say that flat out.
I do want to say that like the biggest movies in this country right now are a video game adaptation, a Dungeons & Dragons movie, and a movie about Air Jordans. Like, Ify Wadiwe could not be more in his element. Like, all of the movies right now are the Ify Chakuta Collection Part 2. It's insane.
Yeah, it really is. It's a good time to be Ify. People who like the things that Ify like. But let's be honest, what did you think when you first heard that this movie was coming out?
Well, my first thought as someone who knows nothing about Dungeons & Dragons was, I can't believe they haven't made more of these because I'm at least aware of the concept of Dungeons & Dragons, which is half the groundwork of branding necessary to start a high-budget film.
Do you remember the previous attempt at this, Drea?
No, and it's okay if you don't, because I knew that there was a previous one, but I don't. Was it animated? Was it real?
No. There was a TV show that was animated, but this was a live-action thing with like Jeremy Irons was the main villain. Thora Birch was in it. Yeah. Wayans, I forget which one.
Marlon,
yeah. Thank you. It was.
And he was
kind of
filming it while he was doing Requiem for a Dream, and he was flying back and forth between New York and wherever in the Eastern Europe they were filming.
He's never recovered.
Yeah. The backstory of that first movie is wild. Like, just like it was back when like D&D was being handed off ownership wise because it was like the brand was in the toilet, and like it's this like crazy like just like rich dude like wanted to make a movie. There's a whole we can't focus too much on it because of the topic of today's episode, but if you want a deep dive on a wild filmmaking process, go read the Wikipedia article on how the 2000 film came to be, because it is bonkers.
I will say this, I actually played Dungeons and Dragons before it was cool. In like the late 70s in junior high, I had a D&D moment It, you know, like there was one place in Atlanta that sold, like, you know, the dice and the figures and the, you know, the books and all that stuff. And, you know, my mother, bless her heart, would schlep me out there on Saturday mornings occasionally. But like that was, it was stone cold nerddom at the time. Now with all of your stand up comedians and your Joe Manganiellos and it's all, everybody's having a groovy hipster time. But I'm telling you, I played it when there was an actual social cost for being a Dungeons and Dragons player.
Yeah.
And subsequently, I remember almost none of it, but there was one Easter egg I left this movie with, and I was like, aha, that's a thing that I know. I get it.
Oh, man. Yeah, I was a victim of Satanic Panic, so I never got to play D&D until I was 18, because I went to Catholic school, and they had a list of things that you couldn't do. Dungeons & Dragons was on it, and one thing I will never forget, K-Rock was on there. You couldn't listen, to K-Rock.
Wait, wow. What? I assumed that the list of things you couldn't do was like finger someone.
No.
They told you, like, there's things you couldn't listen to?
Oh, yeah. They're like, these things, Lord, are of the devil. Yeah.
Amazing.
It's very interesting because I definitely, when this movie was coming out, I wasn't paying attention to who was directing or writing it. So I wasn't really sure. And I knew that, you know, Wizards was behind it. So I was wary that this was another one of those, like, cash grabby, like, Critical Role and Dimension 20 is all big right now. Full disclosure, me and Riley have both been on those things. But it really felt like that very executive move of like, oh, the kids are into this thing, let's make it. But as it got closer, one, I trust Chris Pine with any nerd property. I mean, I loved him in Star Trek. I think he does a good job of like committing in a way that doesn't. And this goes for everyone in this movie and why. And this starts to go into my like writing theory when you write genre things, because I think, you know, in a post. This is going to be the most insane thing I've ever said.
That's probably not true.
In a post-Rick and Morty world, you have a lot of people who want to do genre stuff, but like are making fun of it at the same time. And without honoring your world and letting it be real, it doesn't stick, because it's like, well, if you don't believe in your world, why should I? Whereas you let Chris Pine be the comedic relief, and everyone was funny because they were committing to who they were as characters. So when I got closer to it, and I had enough, you know, it's just a full disclosure of more information than you'll ever need. Wizards just got into a whole bunch of stink because they have a thing called the Open Gaming License, the OGL, and it was leaked that they were going to change it, which anyone who's like both a nerd and into the industry knew what was happening. Hasbro knew that they were coming out with this franchise movie and wanted to protect their trademarks, but then in an inherently kind of slap the face of everyone who made it as popular as it is to make them make the movie, thus causing this huge backlash against Wizards. So you had a lot of people like sneering their, you know, their face at this movie, and then they invited, you know, a bunch of like TTRPG influencers to come to this premiere, and a lot of people who are my friends, who I trust would like, I know when they are saying things are good to honor the contract, and I know when they're genuinely saying something's good, and a lot of them were saying, oh, this is good. And
I got to go to that premiere, the one they did, the screening they did, not the like made the premiere, but the screening they did, the first screening in LA that was just for TTRPG people. And full disclosure too, I do write for Wizards. I write for their website D&D Beyond, so I should point that out there. But I was not paid to come on this show and talk about this movie. I'm a freelancer. No one cares about me enough to do that. And I know Iffy has a similar disclosure because of doing screens. Yeah, but
why don't y'all explain to Drea and certain parts of the audience who Wizards is?
Idea what
Wizards of the Coast. The last That's the company minutes. That publishes D&D, Wizards of the Coast. They're like the Marvel Comics of D&D.
Yeah, they do D&D and Magic the Gathering. And
I'm not going to lie, I liked it better thinking you were talking about actual Wizards.
Yeah.
Well, we're not talking about actual Wizards.
But also worth noting is a couple of years ago, they were bought by Hasbro. So now Hasbro owns Wizards.
Hasbro's like the Disney in this scenario.
Yeah. Oh, what a good analogy. Yeah. Oh, I'll let you continue taking it from there.
I thought, no, I was saying, you talked about that screening. I went to that screening, and It was an electric screening. Like, everybody in this room reacting. I love seeing an event movie in a crowd anyway. And this is a crowd that was primed to be interested in this, but also the crowd that, if it didn't hold up, would have been the most disappointed. Like it, if the movie had been bad, it would have been a real rough watch, because it would have been a room full of people being like, oh no, they did it again. But instead, it was so fun. Like, it was just an exciting moment to be in a theater full of people who were all just having a blast about stuff. So
yeah. And of course, my full disclosure, I hosted D&D Live and all this stuff, but nobody ever pays me enough to not be say I honest. Don't like it. Yeah, exactly. There will be a time when they do pay me enough, but they don't yet. So but yeah, I mean, we, we're geeking out about it as the geeks of this, but I am curious to what a, veteran former player who hasn't played in a while and the person who thought Wizards of the Coast were actual wizards thought of the movie.
They're just warlocks. They serve an overlord. So they're
don't we all? Yeah. I thought it was very... it was interesting because, honestly, the most that I know about Dungeons & Dragons is probably from Stranger Things, from watching those kids play, and, the idea of the shape of it, or just the... It's permeated enough in regular, general pop culture to be like, oh, you roll, and then someone... says, I don't even, whatever, again, I know I sound like an idiot, but...
You don't, you actually, I didn't, you're doing a good job driving it, yeah.
Thanks, Riley.
it's basically playing make-believe with dice. That's right. It's doing improv games, and you use dice to randomize.
And I loved, and that story structure came into play in this movie in a way that both worked for and against it. Like, I thought it was overall very enjoyable and very fun. I'm 100% with you guys on the Chris Pine front. He is... a remarkable, he's an incredibly handsome man who does not need to be sexualized in any way. And there are a lot of leading men who can't do that. Like, that there was, the Michelle Rodriguez character is set up as his best friend. And thank God there was never a turn of oh, maybe there's a romantic connect. Nah, there's not. There's no need to be. And he also doesn't have to hit on the younger girl with the horns who's a shapeshifter, a druid, I believe was what they called her. But so... it's led very well. He sets a really nice tone for it. You get Hugh Grant giving a lot of his Paddington 2, ho-ho, I'm a bad guy energy, which I big time love.
I was hoping for another closing credits musical number from him.
Oh, that would have been awesome. But the shape of it, it's funny that part of me was like, oh, this is nice. It cranks along. There's an overarching storyline that they're following that has an emotional core, but they have all these little bits, but until I was like, oh, duh, the whole thing of Dungeons & Dragons is all of these little quests, because at a certain point I was like, we're still doing this? So old boy from Bridgerton shows up midway through, and I was like, Jesus, we're still putting together a team? It really kind of throws out the shaping that I was expecting, so I was like, oh, this feels a lot longer than I thought it would, but I'm also enjoying it a lot. It was feeling like I was marathon. I felt more like I watched four episodes of a really nice TV show than, but it is cohesive. That sounds more dismissive than I mean.
It does feel like they could have split this movie right in half and made two movies, and they both would have felt full and fulfilling. So I don't think you're wrong about that. I remember watching it. There was a point in the movie when I saw it the first time where I actually was like, oh, are they going to end it here on the cliffhanger and have a sequel movie that's dealing with this other thing? And then it didn't happen. I was like, oh, it's actually...
Are you talking about when they swing that boat around?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did too. I was like, oh, it would be totally fine if it just ended here because... that is the arc of this movie, thieves to heroes. But yes, so I agree. I like that. Yeah.
I was actually shocked. I mean, I only wasn't shocked because I had seen a couple of scenes in the city in the trailer. Mm-hmm. But I was like, oh, maybe they cut that stuff and they're going to end the movie here and have a sequel come out. But I do agree. It has a very episodic feel, too, which is strange for a single movie.
Oh, yeah.
But I do think you're right that that's kind of mimicking, like, we kind of saw several sessions of one campaign play out over the course of the movie, which was interesting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, like Iffy, I had not really paid attention to who was making this either. And then when I found out that it was Daly and Goldsey, I was like, oh, well, I loved Game Night. Like, I think Game Night is a great, you know, kind of contemporary comedy, although they've also done movies I don't love so much, like The Vacation reboot and Horrible Bosses and stuff. But then I also remember that John Francis Daly, of course, has... He first surfaced as an actor on Freaks and Geeks, where they played D&D a lot. And in fact, if you haven't seen the promo clip of him and his co-stars from that show for this movie, it's chef's kiss. I'm with Drea in that I enjoyed all the pieces of it. And there are some really great... I mean, you know, they're set pieces, basically. You know, the way the druid works her way through the castle by changing from animal to animal to animal is like a breathtaking sequence. And there's, you know, a lot of just fun stuff along the way. I think this is the most relaxed I've seen Michelle Rodriguez be in a movie maybe ever. like, she's just having a blast and really, like, enjoying it. And I had a good time with it. I did feel it was a little wearing by the end. Like, it felt a little... too long for me, but I was reminded that I bailed on the Lord of the Rings movie after the first one, because to me the first Lord of the Rings movie was like watching somebody else play D&D. I thought this movie, at least, it is very much of the go to the place and get the thing, and then go to the next place and get the next thing. And they get away with it pretty well and kept me entertained. And there's just a lot of fun little character bits and amusing things along the way. It's certainly better than the Super Mario movie, which very much has the same structure because they're both based on these games that are all quest, you know, oriented.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know it's so interesting in, like, at its heart, D&D is an improv / storytelling game. So you can just tell a regular story and sprinkle in those Easter eggs and it's cookies.
Agreed.
Whereas, like, things like that I have loved that haven't been great, Warcraft, you know, apparently the Super Mario, where it's like it's very derivative and you have people deciding what is worth explaining and what isn't, and a lot of times, or it's just like leaning too hard and being like, we're gonna give you the stuff you love, and you're like, well, as someone who has never played these games, this isn't interesting to me.
Well, this is an interesting IP in that I think so much of D&D is what the players make it, what the dungeon master makes it. And so it's not like the Mario Brothers movie where everybody has played the same game in the same way. So as long as you give them the mushrooms and the little musical bits and the jumps and the pipes and the whatever, they're like, oh yeah, I know that. But D&D is... It's about the structure, you know, and so I think you're right. They do recreate what that structure is like, and that it goes from like side quest, or whatever. But apart from, like, I'm just going to say it because by now you've seen the movie. The one Easter egg I recognized was gelatinous cube.
Oh yeah,
yes.
oh, that's a thing.
Yeah, that's a thing.
All the monsters are a thing.
Yeah.
I think.
I think what helps this movie a lot compared to Mario is that there's none of the characters in it are characters that anyone knows anything about. They're all original creations for the movie, and you're right. It fits the beats of the game, but this movie is chock full of Easter eggs. Almost every shot has something that a fan will recognize, but it's almost never something you need to know what it is as a casual watcher to enjoy it. And the thing that it reminds me the most of is when Marvel put out Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1, the first movie, where it's like, if you are a deep reader of Marvel Comics, you know the Guardians, but for most of us, I'd say 90% of people saw that movie had no idea who any of these characters were. So all you had to do was put the building blocks of that part of the universe into it and then just tell a fun found family story. And that's what this did. I feel like you mentioned Lord of the Rings. I kind of been describing it to people who don't know D&D or had only seen the 2000 movie and didn't know what to expect. And I said, forget the 2000 movie entirely. It's not based on that at all. This movie is to Lord of the Rings what Guardians of the Galaxy is to Star Wars, where it's like, this is a movie that is a genre film. It's a specific type of genre. It takes the trappings of that genre very seriously, but it also has a ton of fun with the story and the characters and the world that it builds. And I think that's what's so great about it, is it does a great job of figuring out what the world is and then just telling the story they want to tell.
Yeah, and I think the fun of it, I think you really nailed it right there, is the simple fact that, you know, there's something with like fantasy and sci-fi films where you just get to throw out nothing words, right? And you're like, okay, it's a sci-fi or fantasy. But in the case of Dungeons & Dragons, these nothing words mean something. So if you're watching it as someone who doesn't know, you're like, oh, that's just a fantasy thing. But if you're a fan, you're like, oh, it's great. Like when they were mentioning Strahd, you know? Like people are like, okay, what? And you're like, oh, no, Strahd, because that's where, you know, it's like all these different things. Or like even like the big bad god who, like, you know, some players have might have fought this person. And now you get to do it, or Red Wizards, where it was like very simple that they are evil, but if you're a fan, you're like, oh, so it was like,
just, didn't say,
the it's just the best of both worlds, and I think they
it felt like it rewarded the fans, but also I didn't feel penalized that I didn't know the deeper elements of those things.
And let me just add that Chunky Dragon Thembershod.
Yes.
I have not laughed that hard at like a genre movie in a long time.
Yeah, that
like,
was very funny.
It's because dragons are so done to death these days.
Yes.
Like Game of Thrones and everything else. And I was like, what a unique and interesting take on a dragon to make it basically a chunky cat.
Yeah.
And like every time his little legs would shake underneath his, when he's jumping from platform to platform, I the first time I saw it, I was in tears and I couldn't breathe because it was such a wild choice. And I loved it so much.
Oh, well, I think it's time to vote.
Vote. Yeah, I chanted. I'll go first.
Yeah, yeah.
Please.
So out of our screen it, stream it, skip it, this is probably a stream it for me, and that might be because of my like lack of familiarity with a lot of it. But I say that with the caveat, this is a very enjoyable view. It, like I said, there's nothing about it that I felt left out of. Just, I'm sure other people could appreciate it more. For me, it's a stream it largely because I was like, oh, I would enjoy this in the way you guys know. I like to binge watch things. Like, this felt like something I could very comfortably watch on my laptop over and over. But it's fun, delightful. The characters all had attributes that I admired in ways and was glad to see represented. And I'll also say, out of nowhere, this is a film similar to Guardians of the Galaxy that reminded me, oh, Bradley Cooper's a good actor.
Yeah.
Like, genuinely, I was like, wait, go back to that little man. What?
Another moment that brought the house down the first time I saw
it. Oh, sure.
He was so soft, what? Soft and lovely. All you could want in a man. Like, yeah.
I was probably a stream it when I saw it, but I think I'm now a screen it having seen, again, not to keep bringing it up, the Super Mario movie to compare the two, because the Super Mario Brother movie, like, if you are a fan
that
of those games...
That movie poisoned your well, man.
Well, look, if you play the games and you get that whatever joy that you get out of the games, out of the movie, then more power to you. I don't begrudge that to you in the slightest. But as somebody who never played those games and knows nothing except for they also had a shitty previous movie version, you know, and one jellyfish song, I didn't know anything. And the movie punished me for not knowing anything by boring the hell out of me. Whereas this one, I knew a little that I'd mostly forgotten, but it didn't matter if I knew nothing or everything, because the movie is skillfully accommodating both those audiences. And while, yes, could it have been 15 minutes shorter and I would have been happier about it? Yes. But is there a lot of stuff within that running time that I had a really fun, great time watching? Absolutely.
Riley!
I saw it at a screening that I was like given for free, and I went to see it, and then I went and paid to see it again this week prior to the show because I wanted to have it more fresh in my mind, but also because I was excited to see it again. So this is definitely a screen it for me. I think not only screen it, not just because of how much I enjoyed it, I know this is your rating system, but also because I think it's a movie that deserves to be seen on a big screen. I think it's a movie that has a lot of fun visuals and in a lot of details that are fun to see. But I will also say that I would give a screen it because I definitely think that I will purchase this movie as opposed to just letting it, because it's going to be streaming, I'm sure, on Paramount Plus at some point. But I will probably buy a Blu-ray of it so that I have a physical copy of it, because I like this movie a lot and I want to be able to come back to it. The couple weeks before anybody else I knew had seen it, besides people who had been at the screening that I was at, were nightmarish for me because I wanted to talk about it with people so badly. And my friend saw it at the big premiere, like 2 days before it premiered, and he and I were on Facebook Messenger just quoting it back and forth, and just like literally that fun thing with friends with a funny, fun movie where you just say a thing, like you just go, Chunky Dragon! And like you just like, you're both just going nuts and like laughing about it. And like,
oh, I saw it with my friend Jen Wilson, and we've texted the word Jarnathan back and forth with each other 12 times. I get that.
But we pardon your pardon.
I love a bit where it is someone doing a flashback that keeps interrupting for some something that'll always get me.
And it fits D&D so well, because it feels like a player who's like making up his backstory on the spot. Yeah, also, yeah. The DM's going, just get to it.
It's like, no. But yeah, and also Jonathan is just such a funny name. And when you see
it's really good.
What Jonathan looks like... Okay, good. Yeah,
I love it. They actually built those wings too. Yeah. I've seen like the behind, like they're articulating wings. It's not just a CGI thing.
And because both the writers are named Jonathan, like that's double funny too.
Yeah,
sorry. Yeah. Iffy, you were about to score it.
Yes, you know, it's an obvious screen it for me, but I think this is not only just going to be a great D&D film that people attach to a great cult film, but I also think this is going to be a film that a lot of DMs will probably show to their parties before they play, so that they're like, oh, this will give you an idea. Because as someone who's played with a lot of D&D folks and have been like, you can do anything in this, and they're like, huh? I was like, you can do anything. And I think this is the best way to describe the type of anything you can do. You see this team come up with a plan, fail at it, come up with another plan, fail at it. Like, it's just like that, where it's just like you got to keep trying till it works. That's your D&D tip of the day, right after my curry power ranking. but yeah, we'll be right back after we hear from another show from Maximum Fun. So stay right there.
I'm Lisa Hanawalt.
And I'm Emily Heller.
Wow, Emily, we've been doing this podcast for 10 years.
I know, but hey, don't worry. You can jump in at literally any episode and hear us talk about some of our favorite stuff. Caterpillars becoming butterflies.
Martha Stewart flying around in a private jet full of trees. Yes, you heard me right, trees.
Neighbors becoming enemies. Just kidding.
Whatever messed up stuff we can find on Wikipedia.
Our impeccable taste in everything from dogs to TV shows to bodily functions.
And horses. Lots and lots of horses. Come for our horned up rants about the world. Stay for the catchy theme songs.
You might not learn anything, but we're a good hang.
Baby Geniuses. Every other week on MaximumFun.org. Baby Geniuses, tell us something we don't know.
Welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Ify Wadiway. In the studio with me are...
Alonzo Duraldi.
Riley Silverman.
Drea Clark.
And now, I think Marissa's got something fun cooked up for us.
Hello. Hello, everybody. Welcome back, Ify. And welcome back, Riley. The last time Riley was on the show was for the Doctor Strange episode, and I cooked up a quiz called Doctor Strange Stuff or Strange Doctor Stuff that is just really one of my highest achievements.
It was pretty
solid title work.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to be beaten by today's, but what I have for you today is a two-part quiz. The first part is I'm going to name a creature or an object, like some kind of, I guess, like arcane object that appears in one of the Dungeons & Dragons movies. Could be this movie or perhaps the 2000 Dungeons & Dragons movie or the 2005 Dungeons & Dragons 2 Wrath of the Dragon God, which was a direct-to-video, or possibly Dungeons & Dragons 3 The Book of Vile Darkness, which came out in 2012, also direct to DVD. So while I think there are certain members of our party today that will have an easier time figuring out what is a real Dungeons & Dragons creature and what is a fictional one, because, oh yes, I have some fictional creatures that I'm throwing in the mix too. So some of these are not Dungeons & Dragons people at all.
So are we guessing which movie? Or are we guessing this is a real one or
real
a fake
or fake?
One?
Is, okay.
Is that
one.
Real fake thing or a fake thing?
Yes.
right.
Real or fake is step one.
Okay.
Step two is if it is real, the follow up question is what Dungeons and Dragons movie is it from?
Okay,
that's tough. Given I have not seen the second or third one.
I'm just now hearing that the second or third one exists, so, you know.
Oh,
I've heard they're better
Vial
than the first
of,
one, but
what's it?
That's a low bar.
The final facet of this quiz tonight is that the fake creatures come to us courtesy of an AI chatbot that I asked to generate some fake Dungeons and Dragons creatures for me.
That might be rough because AI chatbots are often known to Google real things and put them in. So
well, funny you should say that, Riley, because we actually did have to do some cross-checking in a few of these things. Some of the nerdier among you may recognize the sound of them and think they're from Dungeons and Dragons when really they are from something else because... Cheat GPT, more like it. Anyway, let's get on.
I have
on
a friend of mine
quiz.
Who tried to use Google's Bard to like create a D&D like encounter. He's like, look what it did. And he's like explaining it to me. He's like, you're ambushed by goblins in the woods. And I'm like, congratulations, you have now searched for the very first encounter in the D&D starter kit. That's what you just read to me, is the thing that happens in that game.
Technology.
I want to make it clear that I put the word fake in my initial request. But doesn't they're fake to D&D, but
hey,
not fake.
Skynet's gonna Skynet.
Okay, if it's a token specific term. It's not from D&D because there was a weird lawsuit.
Let's get this show on the road. Buzz in by shouting your name really loud.
All right.
Okay.
Well, I'm prepared to dominate. Let's do this.
Okay. I feel like I should excuse myself because I literally wrote an article about this. So.
Well, I was definitely going to have one of them be Gelatinous Cube, but obviously you guys know that one well.
It's also in Onward, by the way, the Pixar D&D-inspired movie. It also has a Gelatinous Cube in it.
Oh, wow.
So I'm going to say the name of the thing and then define it. So first, a wyvern. It's a huge flying lizard with a poisonous stinger in its tail. That's your name, yes.
I'm gonna say real.
Real, yes. Any idea about which movie it's from?
I'm gonna say that this was the 2000 D&D.
This is actually from Dungeons and Dragons 3 from 2012.
Wait, there's
the Book
three?
Of Wild Darkness.
There's too many.
It's too many. How about a lizard folk shaman?
Riley, that is real.
It is real.
I'm going to say it's from the 2005 one.
You got it. That's exactly right.
I have not seen the 2012 one. I knew it wasn't in the 2001 or this current one. So I knew it had to be, I took a stab in the dark in the two that I haven't seen, but it was in one of those.
How about Falazur, a dragon god imprisoned under Sargasso's mountains?
Iffy. That seems like a fakey. I'm thinking it's fake.
It is, in fact, real.
Okay.
Is it from the third movie?
No, it is also from the second movie.
Okay.
I'm trying to throw you guys off.
I couldn't remember what the name of the second movie was. So I was like, wait, wasn't the third one a dragon god?
No, the third one's Vial of something.
Oh, the second one was dragon god. Darn it. Yeah. Okay.
How about...
Dragon for the dragon god.
The Skellorot, a skeletal creature that roams the dungeon with a sword in hand searching for lost treasures.
Drea, fake.
Drea, you're right. It is fake.
Yes! Okay, I'm signing off now. I'm not going to do any better than that. Goodbye, you guys. This was fun.
I could not find any references, a cursory glance, but that might be because Google thought, did you mean Skeletor? Because Skellorot is almost the same as Skeletor.
Yeah.
And no, I did not. How about Tabaxi, a cat-like folk? Yes.
That is real. There are the Tabaxi. As far as movies, let me say the third one, the third not good.
No, they're in the newest one. Remember, because the guy pulls the baby out of the fish. Yeah,
I totally forgot about those Tabaxi. Also, those were practical too, right?
I think so.
Yeah, they were practical.
There were cats?
Yeah, there were cat people.
Oh, now Dre is in.
Oh, I do remember the cats.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, cat people.
Eliza,
do
you remember the cat people?
In this, the most recent one?
Yes.
Yeah, the Tabaxi.
It's been like a couple, 3 weeks, and I've seen a lot since then. I
like you're saying, like, Tabaxi. Like, I'm with a robe, and they're just holding on to a
Stephen Tobolowsky.
Reggie Jean Page saves the cat baby, a Tabaxi baby,
it's the
from
thing
the
is
mountain.
Like, from the thing. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
They don't say words or anything. It's just, but it is, it's a moment. Yes. But it is like if you were looking the other way for a few seconds during the movie, you would not have noticed that it happened.
It births a clothed cat.
Yeah. Well,
yes.
I think it's less of a birth than more of a spitting out a cat that
it's
eating.
From a fish. Yeah, let's not. There's no explaining.
I think
it's
supposed to be a gag of
sound.
Like, oh, a fish is eating a cat instead of a cat eating a fish.
Exactly.
Okay, how about the Rod of Savril, a scepter that gives its wielder control over red
Riley.
Dragons?
That is the first Dungeons and Dragons movie. That is that movie. That's hilarious because the plot of that movie is that the like Thora Birch already has a rod that controls gold dragons, which her council thinks is too powerful, and she should have to turn it back in. And then the plot is so her idea is I'll get this other rod that also controls dragons, and that will be perfectly fine for everybody involved. So it's like saying like, hey, you can't have nukes. Okay, you can have these nukes, but I'm going to get other nukes and everyone will be fine with it.
Okay, how about Shadowcaster, a shadowy being that can summon dark magic to attack its enemies?
Riley, is that fake?
It is fake.
It sounds like it's from another franchise.
There is a video game called Shadowcaster. Ladies and gentlemen, the future. Gorgonodon, a massive lizard-like creature with the ability to petrify its enemies with its gaze.
Iffy?
Yes.
I want to say real.
This one is actually also fake.
No. Yeah, I know. I think I got thrown off because it sounds very much like a Gorgon.
It sounds like the one from Stranger Things. Yeah.
Yeah, it's only like a syllable away from a bunch of things that exist.
But I was like, let me go ahead.
I thought that was fake because D&D for some reason calls their Gorgons Medusas. Unless you're playing in the Theros campaign. I'm a nerd.
That's good deductive reasoning.
I'd just like to remind everyone now that I got one, so I'm one up on Lonzo, and that's what I'm coasting on still.
Did the Theros campaign come before or after the Magic the Gathering Theros set?
It's based on the Magic
Gathering. Okay, that's what I thought.
Because
they were doing
Wizards owns Magic and D&D.
Shut it down.
The combo stuff where they're combining.
Oh, yeah. There's Ravnica, Theros, and Strixhaven are three D&D books based on Magic settings. Okay. And then D&D started.
Dre and I are going to start talking about Agnes Varda, if y'all don't
know. I was going to say, right now, the deep appreciation I have for feeling like one of the cooler people in this group, I owe you all. So kudos for that.
Look, there's a reason why I emailed and asked to be on this episode.
That's true. That is a true story.
We were contractually obliged. There was no way we were discussing this without you.
Yeah, for sure. It came up.
All right, just a couple more. Slaymate, an undead child who feeds on negative energy.
Yuck.
Please tell me that's fake.
I'm sorry to report that is a real thing.
Oh, wow.
From the third Dungeons & Dragons movie, according to its Wikipedia page.
I just want to say that like a drag queen fan, like, slay, mate! Or like an Australian drag queen.
Yeah. It's from Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
Boom. Yeah!
Very nice. All right, finally... I'm not sure about the pronunciation here, but an Aarakocra.
Riley. That's real. That's from the most recent movie. That's what Jarnathan is.
Yeah. Guy had to bring Jarnathan back into it.
Jarnathan!
All right. Well, I want to shout out Maximum Fun's Danny Baruela for helping me learn that the AI was cheating a little bit on this so that I could further research and make sure to know which ones were not also something else. And thank you all for playing my ridiculous game.
Yes, of course.
I liked it.
Yeah, you know, this is one of the good ones, you know.
Yeah, because it's my first zero. If he's all about it. Ooh, more like this, please. Yeah.
Well,
look who likes quizzes now.
Well, now it's time for staff picks. It could be any movie at all. Who wants to start?
Oh, I will. Just mainly because I'm worried Dre is going to steal mine if I don't say it first. Kelly Reichardt has a new movie in theaters, which is very exciting. Because the last film I saw before lockdown was First Cow. So I feel like we've closed the loop somehow. She's back with her frequent leading lady, Michelle Williams, this time making a comedy. It's called Showing Up. It is set in the contemporary Portland, Oregon art scene. It is a few days before Michelle Williams' character has an exhibition going up. And she's trying to deal with last minute stuff, but all those other things keep getting dumped onto her lap. And she's also dealing with her landlady, played by Hong Chow, who's also a much more successful artist in the Portland art scene, who is very blithe about how well she's doing and also about why there's no hot water in Michelle Williams' apartment. It is very low-key in the Kelly Reichardt way, but it is a movie that really says a lot about the creative process, about the sort of communities that we create for ourselves, you know, when we are engaged in creative endeavors, and how those people can be supportive and how they can not be supportive. Yeah, it's really delightful. And it's, you know, it is a kind of a different take than what Reichardt usually does, but at the same time, very much still in her wheelhouse of, you know, very subdued, very minimalist kind of filmmaking that nonetheless speaks volumes about the human condition. So it's A24. It's in theaters. Go see it. Showing up.
Solid choice. I'll back that up and say you can make a delightful double feature, a Portland Pacific Northwest double feature of that and Pig. If you're like, you know what, I'd like two different roads into this town. Those are your good roads. I support that choice, but I actually have a different choice. And it's a film that I programmed at Bentonville a couple years ago, an Irish film that when I programmed was called Beards. It has the much dumber title now, Dating Amber. Boo. But Dating Amber. Anyway, I was flipping
That's
through.
So 90s, gerund noun, you know?
Exactly. And I was just excited because I saw it on a streaming platform. I was like, I know that key art. And I wasn't aware because it is this Irish independent film. It is about a young gay man and a young lesbian girl who fake date in Ireland to sort of throw everyone off the scent. And he's going to go into the military and she wants to move to London. And then, of course, it all starts to fall apart and they need to kind of reconcile. But it's a rom-com and it's sweet and it's Irish and it's funny. And it's currently on Amazon Prime and Hoopla, or you can watch it for free with ads on Tubi and also Canopy, another Alonso platform.
You're playing all the hits for me.
Yeah. So, and you can rent it and buy it and all of the other places, but ignore the title Dating Amber and just enjoy it as a very nice little queer rom-com.
Ooh,
delightful.
Yes, yes. Riley, do you have one for us?
Yeah, I feel like I have one that could be the anchor stone in this film festival that we're programming here, because the movie I'm picking is also a queer rom-com and also has Michelle Williams in it, of all people, strangely enough. But mine is it's the 1999 comedy, But I'm a Cheerleader. It's in my mind recently because I just finally finished watching all of the first season of Poker Face on Peacock. I also just randomly last week ended up at Paley Festival screening of Yellow Jackets at Melanie Linsky was at, so, and Clea DuVall's in the finale of Poker Face, so I feel like I'm just being bombarded with people that were in But I'm a Cheerleader, and so it's always in the back of my mind somewhere. But directed by Jamie Babbitt, it's a surrealist rom-com. I wouldn't even say it's a rom-com, but it has romance in it. It's a comedy, but it's about a gay conversion camp, but it's completely campy and weird. And I saw it, I think last year it was screened at Cinespia one weekend. I think it was a combination with the LGBT Center in LA. But I think it's shockingly held up. It actually felt fairly modern of a film, despite, you know, lack of like smartphones and stuff like that. It really didn't feel like it had aged that poorly at all. I was a big fan of it. So it's just a really, and it's a special place in my heart because it's the first queer movie that I saw in theaters when I was like about to graduate. I think I was a junior in high school when it came out. And so I remember my friends and I driving to an art house theater cinema back then, when it was still hard to go find an indie film in theaters. And there was like maybe one theater in our entire city that was screening it, and I went and saw it. And, you know, it was a pretty special film for me, but I think it's just, it's so clever and it's so interesting. And it really, I think, considering the current state of queer rights and treatment in America, I think it's still a pretty relevant film, unfortunately. So, and Jamie Babbitt, who directed it, has gone on to do a lot of TV directing, including episodes of A League of Their Own. So it feels pretty relevant. So I recommend it if you haven't already seen But I'm a Cheerleader, or if you haven't seen it in a long time, please revisit it because it's amazing.
It's a classic. I did an anniversary screening of it a couple of years ago, and I got to do a Q&A with Clea.
Nice.
And I was like, oh, I could do this for 18 hours. Can I just go line by line of this movie?
And depending on where you live, it's still hard to see an indie movie in a theater. So
yeah,
you
know, that's fair.
Yeah, it's true.
We're lucky people.
I saw it in Columbus, Ohio. So speaking of potatoes in the Midwest earlier, I ate a potato and went and saw. But I'm a
As one does. Iffy?
Well, for me, you know, I'm breaking from this film fest and was thinking of a nice, you know, potential doubleheader for folks who are who enjoyed Dungeons & Dragons. And, you know, I looked to the homie, you know, who I would assume would be a friend of the pod, Brian. Helgeland and A Knight's Tale, you know, featuring... Yeah, because I...
So good.
Yeah, so I think that would be, you know, if you're in a fantasy mood, go ahead and, you know, dip back. I mean, is it really just more of a medieval than the fantasy? But you get the vibes.
That's pretty fair. I mean, just David Bowie songs playing.
Yeah.
Starring Michelle Williams' late husband.
Yes.
Aww. Yeah.
You know,
all circles back.
Yeah, it all. But yeah, I'm going to close this off by saying thank you so much to Riley Silverman. Had a blast having you on. It was a good time. What do you have going on right now that people should check out?
Thank you for having me, by the way. I was really excited to be on for this episode especially, and I love y'all, so I love doing your show in general. But right now, we just actually launched our own actual play podcast, which, for those who don't know what an actual play podcast it is a show where we're actually playing a role-playing game similar to The Adventure Zone here on the network. But we are actually playing a game called Thirsty Sword Lesbians. It's a game created by a writer named April Kit Walsh through Gay Spaceship Games and published by Evil Hat Productions, who sponsor our show. But the show is called Strumpets and Flagons, and it is an all-trans cast playing the game of Thirsty Sword Lesbians. And so it is myself, it is Laser Weber, it is Ben Padden, it's Becca McGlynn, and Josh Kloss right now running it. And so it's a really fun show. We just launched it. I think our third episode just dropped, and we're recording live streams on Sunday afternoons typically, but we're putting it out as an edited audio podcast after that. So it's called Strumpets and Flagons.
Great title.
And plug your book.
And I have several Star Wars books, including Exploring Tatooine, an illustrated guide, which Alonzo loves. He's a gigantic fan.
Couldn't put it down.
Yeah.
Yes.
The book is coarse, irritating, and it gets everywhere.
Oh, well, Dre and Alonzo, thank you for another wonderful show. It's good to be back in the virtual booth.
We missed you so much,
kid. Welcome.
Well, you know, look, on the speaking of the Iffy Chakude collection, next week we're going to be talking about Air. So check that out in theaters if you want. And if you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at Maximum_Film. Our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/MaximumFilm or send us an email at MaximumFilm@MaximumFun.org. Our producer is the wonderful Marissa Flaxbart. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher, who is also wonderful. And this is a production of Maximum Fun. Bye-bye.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.